हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर श्रीपासरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. Okay, so now Bhishma is then routing, you know, all the troops, Pandavas. Arjuna now is attacking Bhishma, and Bhishma is then is countering and doing so many wonderful things that even his prowess in fighting, then it says, even Krishna was astonished by his skill and power. Seeing Arjuna's chariot swamped, Drishtadyumna rushed to his aid, accompanied by a large number of troops. He released volleys of powerful shafts which distracted Bhishma from his attack on Arjuna. At the same time, the twins hurled their weapons at him. Arjuna, freed from Bhishma's assault, sent countless arrows back at him, and the king supported him. Other Kuru fighters rode up to assist Bhishma, and gradually the fight between all the warriors became a general conflagration. As the two armies clashed, the sun pursued his course to the western hills. Once again the conches blew, and the soldiers lowered their weapons. Slowly they withdrew from the field. Both sides had suffered heavy losses, but the Pandavas had been particularly afflicted by Bhishma's prowess. As Rakshasas and carnivorous beasts and birds descended on the battlefield, the troops rested for the third night, exhausted from the day's fighting. Drishtadyumna was cheered by the report of the third day of battle. It seemed that even Arjuna and Krishna together could not check Bhishma when he fought with fury. And there was also the mighty Drona, who was perhaps even more powerful than Bhishma. What to speak of Kripa, Ashwatthama, and the other Maharatas? Even if the Pandavas somehow managed to overpower Bhishma, there was still Karna waiting on the sidelines to come into the battle, and he would not have been fighting, so his strength would be fresh. Things looked promising for the Kauravas. The old king looked forward with hope to the fourth day. Right, so he's always looking forward with hope, but the point that everybody said before is, it's not that it won't be a great battle. The whole point, if it's not a great battle, is anybody going to remember it after 5,000 years? But we're still talking about it today. And this is not the first time we've heard, because it's a great battle. But the point was, is that was made that Krishna has already decided on how it's going to go. He's already taken the side. And not only that, it's not just as taking the side. The point is the whole material world is for becoming a devotee. And we see the Pandavas are devotees. All the Shastras are telling you how to serve Krishna. The Pandavas are serving Krishna, right? So all the things that the material world is not for, means turning away from Krishna and being inimical towards the Vaishnavas, that Duryodhana is doing. So since Krishna comes to establish Dharma and get rid of all the demons and that, then it's not a big question on how what's going to happen is the final point. But how the pastime will unfold, that will have some very wonderful, details and all that. On the fourth morning, Arjuna arranged the Pandava forces in a vyuha shaped like an alligator. From a distance, it looked like a mass of clouds. On the other side, the Kauravas arranged a counterway and moved towards their foe. As the two armies came together, the earth shook. The chief chariot fighters of the two sides clashed, while the infantry fought hand to hand on the ground. Once again, a great din arose. The Pandavas had been cheered by Krishna after their battering at Bhishma's hands, and they fought with renewed vigor. Arjuna fought with Bhishma and kept him at bay, while Drishtadyumna and other great fighters slaughtered many enemy kings and their forces. Thinking of his vow to slay Dhritarashtra's sons, Bhima began to search them out. As he ranged across the earth, causing destruction, he came across Duryodhana's chariot. Drawing up his own chariot at its distance, he smiled as he saw Duryodhana's many brothers surround their king. Here was his chance to finish them all. Duryodhana saw Bhima facing him. The two enemies glared at one another for a moment. Then Bhima took up his mace, roared, and raced towards Duryodhana. With a wave of his gloved hand, Duryodhana ordered a large division of elephants to charge the advancing Bhima. Licking his lips and whirling his iron mace, named Shaikya, Bhima leapt from his chariot. He ran straight at the company of elephants, with his mace held high. Careering about, he smashed the elephants and brought them down one after another. The elephant warriors could not approach his circling firebrand. Even his terrible shouts made the huge beasts stop in their tracks and tremble. Right, so they're war elephants, so they're going, and they can handle all the, you know, the din of battle. But when he shouts, they become shocked, because they can make a big noise. You know, no one can make as loud a noise as them. But this guy can make a louder noise than them, so. Behind Bhima came Abhimanyu and Draupadi's sons, as well as Drishtadyumna and the twins. They all fired razor-headed arrows, which beheaded the fighters on the elephants. The riders appeared like trees on a mountain with their tops cut off. The leader of the elephant division, Magadharaj, goaded his mount towards Abhimanyu. The immense beast resembled Airavata, Indra's elephant carrier. Unperturbed, Abhimanyu shot a long iron arrow that hit the elephant between the eyes, penetrated up to its feathers. So arrows by nature means, like, for our bows are like, you know, good arrows like this, but it's a long arrow, so that means it's longer, you know, and they're, you know, but in proportion, you say. And the pharaoh feathers at the end, that means this much of the arrow is going into the elephant's head, you know, like that. And it's an iron arrow, so it's not just a wooden arrow, so it has that weight to it. And mass, so it just will go very nicely. As the beast fell like a mountain toppling, Abhimanyu fired another arrow that took off the head of its royal rider. Bhima continued annihilating elephants with mace blows. He felled them with a single stroke, and they dropped down with their heads broken open. Others had their tusks, backs, and legs broken. They fell, vomiting blood and screaming. Bhima moved among them like Shiva wielding his pinaka weapon. The Pandava looked exactly like that mighty god dancing his wild dance of destruction at the end of the cosmic age. His mace, stained with blood and fat, whizzed through the air like a roar like the ocean, because they also, how the maces were made, that when you twirled them, they would make a sound. You know, they would roar like that. You know, you'd have to have someone strong enough to do it. Whirl anything, it'll make a war, but the way they are is part of the thing, just like the chariots rattle. It's the way they're made. They can make them that they run smoothly and make no noise. What's the fun of that? You know what I'm saying? You have a war chariot, it's got to rattle and make noise. You know, just like, let's say you have a Ferrari, it has to make noise. You know what I'm saying? If you had the Ferrari there and it's electric, it just goes, like that, you go, what? You know, what's the point? Like clouds driven in a tempest, the elephant forces broke and fled. Surrounded by the carcasses of the hundreds that were slain, Bhima looked like Rudra standing in the middle of a cremation ground. He roared repeatedly, his red eyes looking about for more enemies. Duryodhana foamed at the mouth. He screamed out to his troops, "Kill Bhima!" All the forces supporting Duryodhana turned and rushed towards Bhima, who smiled grimly as they charged. Right, the other smiled as, okay, something to do, but here he's smiling grimly because, you know, he's about to, he's just going to kill them all, right? The advancing army came like a tidal wave towards him, but Bhima stood firm to meet him. The other Pandava warriors flanking Bhima blew their conches and roared along with him. All of them joyfully met the charging Kauravas with volleys of weapons. They were like the seashore resisting the surging sea. Bhima alone checked the leading Kauravas by ranging about with his mace. He again created confusion among his foes. They looked upon him as if he were the immovable Mount Meru. None of their weapons affected him at all. Most were knocked to the ground by his mace. Those that struck him, he shrugged off. So even if they did hit him, it's just, you know. Headed by Bhima, the Pandava forces crushed the Kaurava army like an elephant crushing a cluster of reeds. With one blow from his mace, Bhima would destroy a chariot along with his charioteer and the warrior fighting on its terrace. Right, so one hit, and they're big, you know. He killed the charioteer and the Kshatriya on the there, you know. So it's like, you know, it's very serious. As he roved about like a tornado, the Kaurava warriors turned their eyes away from him in utter horror. Surrounded by many of his brothers, Duryodhana roared out a challenge. With a grim smile, the Pandava glared at him. Seeing the prince and his brothers mounted on chariots, Bhima quickly signaled to his charioteer to bring over his own chariot. Jumping aboard, he rushed at his foes. As Bhima approached them, because you saw he jumped off, not because he his chariot was destroyed, because he was fighting elephants, and so he prefers to do that with a mace or, you know, a sword or, you know, by hand. They're much more fun that way. Plus, when you get that close, the elephant on that side can't do anything. But if you're here at a distance, then all the riders on the elephants, they can shoot weapons at you. But if you're there dealing with one elephant at a time, what's the guy, you know, except for the guy right next to you, they can't even see you. Jumping aboard, he rushed at his foes. As Bhima approached him, Duryodhana and his brother Nandaka fired arrows at him, wounding both Bhima and Vishoka, his charioteer. They cut Bhima's bow apart, and it fell in pieces to the floor of his chariot. Unable to tolerate their attack, Bhima took up another bow as tall as a man. Releasing an arrow fitted with a horseshoe head, he cut apart Duryodhana's buffalo horn bow. Right, so buffalo horn is going to be very, very strong. And buffalo horn means you don't have one buffalo horn that's big. That means it's laminated. So the strongest bows basically, you know, are laminated horn or laminated bone. You know, so they make it kind of thin. It's got that strength and you laminate and all that. So these things are very serious to make. The Hunas, they used to have laminated bows like this, of bone or like that. And they were, no one could defeat them. They were so powerful. Excited to the highest pitch of his anger, Duryodhana took hold of another bow from the many lying in his chariot. He instantly fired at Bhima a long hammer-headed arrow that resembled a bludgeon. It blazed the air and struck Bhima full on the chest. Rendered senseless by the bow, Bhima fell to his knees for some moments. The Pandava forces supporting Bhima poured upon Duryodhana a relentless shower of arrows. As the Kaurava warded off the attack, Bhima regained his senses and set up a shout. He quickly pierced Duryodhana with 8 swift shafts. As Duryodhana's brothers converged on him, he licked the corners of his mouth like a hungry wolf. 14 of Dhritarashtra's sons surrounded him at once and hurled countless arrows and other weapons at his chariot. Laughing amid their ferocious assault, Bhima swiftly fixed razor-headed shafts onto his bow. Sending the arrows to all sides with deadly accuracy, he cut off his opponent's heads one after another. Duryodhana looked on helplessly as brothers were slain by like a herd of deer killed by a lion. So that means there's 14 there in one place. Their beautiful helmeted heads, adorned with golden earrings, rolled in the mud. In a short time, all 14 were killed, and the rest of the brothers had turned and fled. So 14 out of 100 now down. See, because up to this point, it's Duryodhana and his 100 brothers. Everybody else dies. They're there. They're good. But now the brothers are starting to disappear. That will weigh on Duryodhana. Bhishma came up to Duryodhana to support him, and he shouted commands to the army. Bhima is wantonly slaying the king's sons, although they are accomplished in arms and courageous. Quickly fight with the son of Pandu before he annihilates all our princes. The battle soon became general as the warriors of both sides came together, matching their prowess and their weapons. Because otherwise you have this Kshatriya, you know, the chariot with this one and his, and they're fighting, and this one over there. But at some point it just gets like this general. Everybody just fights whoever is there. And that. And so it doesn't have that same, you know, they start off with the vyuhas and all that, but at some point it just goes into general like that. We've seen that happen a few times now. As evening approached, Gadodkacha and the Rakshasa followers, whose strength increased with the onset of night, worked another carnage among the Kauravas. Seeing his troops receiving the worst of the fight, Bhishma blew his conch and ordered the army to withdraw. As the afflictive Kaurava forces left the battlefield, the victorious Pandavas cheered. Ashamed and dispirited, the Kauravas went back to their encampment. On their side, the Pandavas, cheerful despite their wounds, returned to their camp with Bhima and Gadodkacha at their head. They praised and worshipped their two heroes who had caused such destruction among the Kauravas. Right, because it means when the sun sets, so as it gets close to that, the Rakshasas get more powerful. So that last bit of the day, when everyone else is getting the getting more tired, the Rakshasas are getting more powerful. So I always got to watch out for them, you know. Chapter 8, the Rakshasas show their power. Dhritarashtra wept when he heard of his son's death, right? So now it'll start to sink in. Because obviously, oh yeah, no, maybe we'll win and all that. Now 14 gone. Oh, Sanjaya, I am afraid. I am amazed to hear of Bhima's godlike prowess. Hearing too of my son's humiliation, I am burning with anxiety. What will be the outcome of this war? It's kind of like everybody already told you, but hey. I remember only Vidurya's prophecies. By the influence of destiny, it seems his words will prove true. Right? Because you're thinking, oh, it's just destiny like this. Destiny is there, but we have to understand that's all ultimately controlled by Krishna's indication. The Pandava heroes are emerging successful, even though our forces, headed by Bhishma and Drona, appear so invincible. What austerities have they performed? What knowledge did they cultivate? What boons have they been bestowed upon them? Alas, my sons are doomed, right? So he's thinking about, okay, because up to this point, they've only thought about what they know in the martial science. But the thing is there's also the point is, who's pious is victorious. So for 12 years, well, actually 13 years, but specifically 12 years, the Pandavas were just going on pilgrimage, sitting with sages, hearing the Shastras, practicing austerity, you know, living the life of someone living in the forest. And while the Kauravas, they were just enjoying the kingdom. You know, they were careful to, you know, maintain what they had, but they weren't improving their piety. And they weren't specifically improving their martial prowess. They were keeping ready. They weren't losing what they had. And same time as Arjuna, then he was increasing what he knew. You know, he was already the best of everyone there, and now he's going and getting all the celestial weapons, and he's, you know, so many more things he's picking up while he's in the heavenly planets. You know. Dhritarashtra began to wail. Sanjaya consoled him, but the king continued to weep for some time. Struggling to regain his composure, he clutched the arms of his golden throne and continued to speak. Am I being chastised by destiny? Tell me, Sanjaya, why my sons are being killed while the Pandavas survive. I cannot see any end to this ocean of distress into which I am plunged. I am like a man who desires to swim across the sea. No doubt Bhima will slay all my sons. O Sanjaya, tell me what Duryodhana and his generals are doing as a result of the Pandavas' victory. Right? So what's happening? Because up to this point we heard that they heard the battle and they were satisfied. They went back to, you know, whatever they were doing. We didn't hear what happened. We found on, you know, that first day, then there was some discussion on, okay, what happened and everything. But, you know, now this is again, you know, after a few days, now he's asking again, what's happening back at camp? Because they'll go back at camp, they'll discuss what happens that day, they'll make the plans for the morning, then they'll all go and, you know, eat, rest, and, you know, prepare themselves for the next day. Then in the morning they'll gather, then they'll finalize, you know, the plans, and then move forward. Yes. So this is now the position. So then Dhritarashtra wants to know, you know, what's going to happen here. Sanjaya sat at the king's feet with his eyes closed. He could see everything occurring on the battlefield in both camps. Visualizing the scene at Duryodhana's tent, he said, "Listen carefully, O king, and I shall describe everything. What is the use of hoping for victory? You have already been told so many times about the Pandavas' position. Those heroic men live only for Krishna's pleasure, and the universe itself depends on his will. Your sons are wicked and have perpetrated numerous ills upon their cousins. Now they are repeating the bitter fruits." Sanjaya then continued his description of the battle. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.